for the rest of this interview, because something you were saying before, when you were talking about the educational resources, this is, although it's the International Animal Rescue, involves animals and the environment and things of that nature, this is very much a people-powered movement. And you mentioned in the beginning, your whole goal is to change hearts and minds and to get people on board, and your education, there's educational resources on your website. How do you get the naysayers who might not necessarily see your point of view to get on the bandwagon of the great work that you're doing with the International Animal Rescue?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's, I think, you know, we're, the debate comes around the causes, doesn't it? I think people are, you know, most people, you know, love animals. You know, we have our pets, we have our sort of relationship. We have a relationship with animals. It might be different animals in different parts of the world. You know, it might be the wildlife. It might be the birds singing in the tree. So we, you know, I think as a human race, we have a sort of bond with animals. So it's then just trying to sort of link up that actually it's not so hard. We're not asking people to change their lives. We're just asking people to think a little bit about their relationship with animals and nature, and by sort of using the animals that people can, you know, we do a lot of work with bears, but people, I mean, they're quite big, vicious animals, but I think because we all, I don't know whether it's because we all are given a teddy bear as a baby, people love them, you know. It's kind of it's trying to find ways to get people to engage more with wildlife, animals, nature, and just to stop and think. You know, I've had a lot of issues with social media, for example, about exploitative videos with animals and wildlife. And we had a campaign a few years ago called Tickling is Torture, which were these people that had slow lorises as pets, and when you kind of touch them, they put their arms up in the air and it looks like they're being tickled, and it's all, you know, and actually they're really highly stressed and, you know, not having a great time. And it's easy, if you don't know, just to look at that and laugh and like it or share it or whatever, and it's kind of perpetuates this sort of the problem. And, you know, the social media companies have got a lot on their plate, and they never, you know, we're always unhappy, aren't we, that they're not doing enough. I think we have to sort of take that responsibility as individuals and sort of say, you know, what's okay and what's not okay, and learn a bit more about it. But I think by using the sort of animal, our relationship, that's almost like a primal relationship that we have with animals and wildlife, that we can just take that to the next stage and say, well, you know, you don't have to change everything about what you're doing. It's just to stop and think. And if you're going on holiday and, you know, you see a situation that you think, well, that animal is probably in terrible conditions in that nasty zoo, or it's being asked to perform for you, is that really right? Is that the way it should be living? So that's really the way we're in Indonesia. It was really interesting with the slow lorises. You know, people didn't really know it was elite. These were rare endangered animals that were being sold in the markets. And actually, when they found out, they're not people that are, you know, deliberately going out trying to traffic wildlife. They just wanted a pet for their kids. And when you sort of said, actually, you know, these are nocturnal primates, they're actually the only venomous primate, which is really unusual, they don't really make great pets. They're kind of like, oh yeah, okay, sorry, I didn't realise. And they're happy. And they're sort of almost like, well, can you take it then? I don't want it if it's like that. So it's just raising awareness, not preach. We don't go around preaching to anybody about anything. It's just kind of just giving people information, and then hopefully the word kind of spreads.
Something else, when we were first putting the show back together, you and I, Gavin, and with Kusi and Cody, something else you were mentioning, because we've talked about your projects all over the world, I don't think we've touched on your work with Costa Rica this summer with the howler monkeys. Talk a little bit about that, and then if you could tie that into this whole concept you've given us of how that it impacts humans and the environment, how it all goes together with a project like this, just so people can put it in perspective.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, sorry, I Can't believe I missed Costa Rica. I'm going there next week, so it should be top of my mind. So Costa Rica, a project we've been involved with for coming up for about 7 or 8 years now. So the issue there is a little bit different. I mean, everybody knows Costa Rica. It's a very sort of biodiverse, beautiful country. A lot of people go there to enjoy nature. And they've done an amazing job of regreening a lot of the country. They've got a lot of national parks. And it is spectacular as a country. Rich in biodiversity, fabulous wildlife. And the problem we have, and of course that comes at a price, because it's become more popular, more people want to go, so you need more holiday homes, more hotels, etc. And we were started working with a very small group on the Pacific West Coast, and where these little coastal communities are being sort of developed for tourism, we were finding that obviously there's a lot of the wildlife has kind of moved in, and where everything's been regreened, and where the electric cables are being put into properties and hotels and supported the infrastructure that's being built. In our case, howler monkeys. In other parts of the country, other tree living animals like sloths were being electrocuted on the electric cables. Teamed up with this group that had started a small project, really leveraging our experience, vet primate experience in Indonesia, to offer some support, and subsequently we've sort of taken on the project in full. I mean, we've developed a rescue centre, so there's somewhere for these animals to come in. I mean, a lot of them don't make it. It's high voltage electricity. What we sometimes find is that if there's a mother carrying a baby, the mother will be electrocuted and killed, but the baby is slightly insulated by the fur of the mother. So the baby, therefore, can, depending on how the electricity flows through, is either injured seriously or it is something that can be recovered from. So we've got a rehabilitation program, really, which is very intensive care at the beginning. They're very delicate, and much more delicate than orangutans that are remarkably robust. These little tiny howler monkeys are, you know, can be literally anything from a few days old, and we work with them, develop them into small troops over a few years, get them, you know, back up to strength. And the ones that can make it and get over the damage from the electrocutions, they then can be released as a troop, little troop, back into the wild. So that's kind of the thrust of the project. And then, of course, because as I've always said, you know, we're trying to deal with the root cause of the problem. We're then working with the government and the electric companies to identify hotspots where animals are being electrocuted, so that those areas can be insulated. We can cut back the trees to stop the animals getting access to the cables, putting up rope bridges, and just trying to, so far it's been okay, but it's not been great. We're, you know, it's a bit reactive, and we've got a big campaign at the moment, really trying to put a bit more pressure onto the Ministry of Environment and the government to be a bit more proactive about it. So not to put uninsulated, unsafe equipment into rural areas or areas of forest, which are, you know, where they know there's wildlife and, you know, there's a risk it's going to be damaging, which actually is enshrined in the Indonesian law and constitution that wildlife should be protected. And this is a bit of an anomaly. And it's always, when you're talking to tourists who have seen this thing, you know, they're like, they're so shocked because they've come there to see the nature and, you know, this sort of green brand that Costa Rica has. And, you know, rightly so. You've got this sort of almost like a bit of a dirty secret with these animals being electrocuted, and it's thousands and thousands of animals a year. So again, short term is the rescue centre trying to, you know, provide care and get these animals back into the wild, which is our sort of every animal matters. But long term, working with the government on solutions, trying to put in the systems and processes to stop animals being injured in the first place, which those things take a bit more time, yeah, because it's always about, you know, getting the budget and getting it to be one of the more important things for them to deal with. So yeah, we've got quite an intensive campaign and some legal action going on at the moment to try and force a bit of action from that side of things. But it's a fascinating rescue centre. Most of our other places around the world are kind of either one, two or three species. I think our rescue centre in a year and a half we built a new rescue centre that opened the beginning of 2024. We had a temporary facility before that. And I think we're up to 140 species that have come through, everything from snakes to sea turtles to big cats. Obviously, we've had all the different primates through, spider monkeys, howler monkeys, you know, it's lots of birds. Again, pet trade, we've got macaws coming in that have been kept as pets. So working with the forest, sort of like the forest police that confiscate animals that shouldn't be being kept as pets, we're sort of good relationship with them. So it's kind of a fascinating project, and that's just gives you an idea of the sort of biodiversity of the country. It's just with the volume and the sheer diversity of animals that come through the rescue centre. It's a busy, busy little setup.
So, Gavin, I know that we ran out of time. So quickly, people want to read more regarding the organization and also the initiatives that you guys are busy with, or updated projects that you guys are also busy with. How can they get a hold of you?
Absolutely, yeah. So as I said, we're completely reliant on support from the public. So really appreciate this opportunity. Take a look at our website, which is internationalanimalrescue.org. Just search for International Rescue on the search engine, and you'll find us. There's lots of ways to get involved and support us in different ways. Reach out. As I say, we can only do what we do with, you know, really our only constraint is the amount of funding that we have available, and we are, you know, grateful for any support, and all the programs we're working on are scalable. So it's really, we've kind of proved the concept. It's, we can do more with more support. So as I say, internationalanimalrescue.org. Take a look. All the things I've talked about, you'll find information there. You can follow us on all the usual social media channels, and it'd be great to have people following us and learning more about our work.
Before we go, there was something we were talking about before we got on the air, and I think it's worth noting. There's something that you guys do that's a One Health approach that I think is really important to leave with, because it kind of ties up everything we were discussing. It's humans, it's the environment, and it's animals, and how it all kind of works together with the work you do, this holistic approach. Before we go, if you could describe that to the audience, I think that'd be very impactful to leave it on.
Yeah, thanks, Ricky. Yeah, so the holistic approach, it can be encapsulated in what we call a One Health approach. So it takes the view that the health of people, the health of animals, and the health of the environment are all interconnected. And by supporting and investing in people, you are investing in nature, and by investing in nature, you're investing in the environment, and by investing in the environment, you're supporting people. So it's kind of a circular approach. And if you look at the problem in the round, then the impact is so much stronger, because if you approach a problem very much, you know, I think in the past conservation has been done to people. You know, it's kind of big organizations that sit in big offices and come up with great ideas, and it all seems fine on paper, but things haven't gone so well. You know, we've seen lots of animals facing extinction, lots of habitats threatened and habitats lost. So, whereas we're kind of approaching it the other way around, approaching it from the ground up, understanding almost at the village level, almost at the individual level, what the pressure is. And by adopting this sort of One Health, you know, addressing educational needs, health needs, well-being and livelihood needs of a community, it then means that they are empowered to support the environment that they live in and around, especially in, when you're working with these, you know, communities that live in and around the habitats that you're trying to protect. So it's really just trying to adopt that interconnected approach between environment, people and nature at its sort of grassroots level. And, you know, in the last, I suppose, 10 years while we've been developing this, you know, we really have seen the impact and the stats, you know, the numbers. For example, you know, back when we first started rescuing orangutans in Borneo, we were, you know, we rescued hundreds in the first few years. In the last couple of years, we've rescued a handful because all the time and effort is spent working with the communities rather than having to rescue stuff. It's that sort of cause and effect approach. So that's, if you take the markets as another great example, if you just go into the markets and tell people to stop trading wildlife, they're just going to kick you out, and, you know, there's a lot of organized crime involved and it's all a bit dangerous. But if you talk to the people in the markets about actually their health, and obviously this is a bit more pertinent since the pandemic, where people are a bit more aware of spillover from wildlife, and keeping animals in these markets is, you know, maybe quite risky and dangerous and not good for human health, you know, they kind of see it a bit differently. They think, oh, actually, yeah, I kind of know what happened there, and I can, you know, maybe keeping a civet cat on top of a cage of bats, on top of a cage of lorises, I can see how that might be a problem, you know, as pathogens spread between different species and ultimately people. So it's kind of coming at it from a health perspective, but the health of people, the health of the environment, and the health of wildlife, and that kind of encapsulates the thinking. I hope that helps kind of explain it.
It does. I just thought it was good to note, because you are a One Health approach as you connect people throughout the world, and we are One World Radio, which brings people like you to the forefront through the power of radio around the world. So I just thought that was a really cool way to tie things together.
I would like to say thank you, you know, for all the communities out there in the world, for the beautiful work that you're doing for the community. But anyway, thank you very much, Gavin, for the beautiful work that you're doing for the community. And also, I wanted to know, I know that you said you would love one day to have an organization open here in Africa. Are you thinking that, or is just the thought just came just now while we're doing this interview?
Well, no, I mean, we've got a lot on our plates at the moment. Maybe never say never is all I would say. I'd love to. I'm sure there's loads of great groups doing amazing work in Africa, and maybe one day in the future we can team up with a local group there. But maybe in the medium term. But right, you know, as I say, right now it's, you know, I think you alluded to it earlier. There's the pressure of funding and fundraising with cost of living and some of the funding channels being cut off. You know, we're having to be a little bit careful what we take on at the moment. You know, people are feeling the pinch, and we appreciate that. That means we're having to work harder to get the funding. So, but maybe one day it would be great.
And on that note, Gavin, we thank you very much for coming on our show today. You've been listening to the One World Radio Show on 88.7 FM WRHU, Radio Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York, 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh, and Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, the mother of community radio. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens julle.
Hello, this is Hatsune Miku. You are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.